You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right, we're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 154 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Adventures of the Super Sons number 11, Batman number 72, Justice League number 25, Shazam number 6, The Green Lantern number 8, Young Justice number 6, and Swamp Thing season 1 episode 3, He Speaks. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. After brief appearances in Doomsday Clock, the Justice Society of America will officially return to the DC Universe this fall. The World War II era team will guest star in the pages of September's Justice League number 31, and this is what Scott Snyder told Newsarama. I can't tell you how honored and thrilled I am to be able to reintroduce them to the mainline continuity. I've been waiting to do this for months and months and months and months and months. Really, since we did Metal. I have really big plans for them. I mean, they play a really crucial role in this story. Now, me personally, I never really read any Justice Society of America books, but I've always been interested in the characters like Alan Scott and Jay Garrick and things like that.
I've not read a ton. I know I definitely read some of the mid-2000s Geoff Johns run. I did not read the whole thing, but I used part of it when I was writing about the history of Black Adam. I used that because he pops up. Part of his character arc run that leads into 52 starts in that JSA run. And it was good. I mean, it's very popular with a lot of JSA fans for a reason. I also read the new 52 version of the JSA, which was Earth 2. And so it was all of those Golden Age heroes, but they were like updated for the kind of like modern, they're like modernized versions of them. Controversial for a lot of people. I enjoyed most of that run, though, to be honest with you. It was kind of cool getting this different version. I understand it. Why you wouldn't like it if it's like permanently changing those characters, but if you read it as like a sort of Elseworlds essentially, which it wasn't, but if you read it like that, I think you can get past the change to the characters and enjoy the different take on them.
All right, and up next for DC News, Dial H for Hero and Wonder Twins increased to 12 issues each. And I didn't realize these were miniseries. I thought they were ongoing. So when I saw this article, it surprised me.
Yeah, I have to say it was weird because it was positive news, but I took it poorly because I was like, wait, Wonder Twins isn't ongoing? Dial H, I think that one makes sense as a miniseries. I think I like that has a sort of conclusion. Wonder Twins, though, like, it's good. I really don't want that to end.
I know, it's been really good. And who knows, they may extend them even more if they're popular enough.
That's true. I like Dial H for Hero, but I think that one particularly makes sense as a miniseries, just the nature of it. I don't know, like, how many of those can you do?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
and I also, to be fair, I also get why you would do Wonder Twins as a miniseries, because again, like, what are the chances it can sustain itself as an ongoing? I just really like it, and I think it's also more apt to be an ongoing than Dial H.
Agreed. All right, and up for our next bit of DC news. D23 DC's Legion of Superheroes will finally return in full force this September. First with a two-part prelude special, followed by an ongoing series. Both are by Brian Michael Bendis. It all kicks off September 18th with Legion of Superheroes Millennium Number 1. I know there's some people out there excited about that, because Legion of Superheroes has kind of been absent here in the last few years.
Yeah. These are that and the JSA news are clearly the two big fallouts from Doomsday Clock, which, I mean, is not a surprise that they're both teams factor into the story. I am curious, though, what else is going to change out of Doomsday Clock. I feel like it was originally going to be more than that, and I feel like those are really the only two things that are going to end up coming out of that story for the most part.
Yeah. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy series spins out of Heroes in Crisis. Not that surprising.
No, and I also feel like that's a loose term, spinning out. Like, that's an obvious team-up book that, you know what I mean? Like, yes, they did team up in Heroes in Crisis, but, like, also other comics.
You know what I'm disappointed not seeing spin out of Heroes in Crisis? That would be Booster Gold and Blue Beetle.
Yeah,
Even for,
again, that would be something that I would expect a miniseries out of, but I agree. Obviously, I agree.
That's what I was just getting ready to say, as a miniseries. I don't think they could probably sustain an ongoing series, but miniseries, yeah.
It's a really incredible. When I think back on the Booster Gold series that spun out of 52, it's shocking to me that it went on as long as it did.
So, it was really good, so...
Yeah, but still, like, how unlikely is that? That got, like, I think close to or over 50 issues.
Yeah.
Which is nuts. Like, how did that Booster Gold title get that many issues? Think about all the books now that get canceled well before that.
Yeah, that's true. All right, and up next for DC News, DC's Teen Titans Go and Scooby-Doo Team-Up are ending with September 2019 issues.
Is that the Scooby-Doo Apocalypse one, or is that the other Scooby-Doo?
I think it's the other Scooby-Doo.
Okay. And I wonder if that one... I will admit ignorance. I don't know if that other Scooby-Doo one is still going or not. It was for the long... Like, that went for a shocking amount of time, even if it is over. That was a weird book.
I haven't read it, so... And I'm not a big fan of Teen Titans Go, so... I think that's geared for a younger audience.
That's definitely not that's not a controversial take, that's for sure.
All right, up next for DC News, DC has produced a trailer for Superman Year One, its upcoming black label release from writer Frank Miller and artist John Romita Jr. I gotta tell you, Cletus, I was a slacker. I put it in my news, and then I freaking forgot to watch it. I was so busy today.
I'll admit that I have not watched it either, but also I'm really not personally interested in that story. They are big names, and I know that that's gonna get a lot of readers, and that's cool. If you're fans of those two, that's great. I just, for me, whatever. Not my cup of not. That is not a creative team I'm looking for on Superman for me personally.
And I understand why. All right, up next for DC News, DC's Dollar Comics format is returning after 36 years at the same price, but with a smaller page count. Beginning on September 4th, the publisher will be reprinting special issues from its history at $1 reprints, similar to Image's Comics Image First and Marvel's True Believer reprints.
I think that's a really smart idea. Obviously, it's something they should have been doing sooner than this.
Yeah. All right, and in further DC news, Titans Season 2 casts English actress Natalie Gamede as the recurring guest star of Mercy Graves. The Titans version of the DC character is described as ruthless, cunning, right-hand, and bodyguard to notorious Lex Luthor, serving her boss with unquestioned loyalty. Her connection to the Luthers run deep, and Mercy has been a friend of the family and in Lex's life since they were young. I gotta say, I thought this was weird to cast Mercy Graves in a Titan show.
Am I missing? Did they cast a Lex? Am I forgetting this?
I don't remember them casting a Lex, but they did cast Superboy, if you remember. So that might be why they're casting Mercy, but I don't.
That makes sense. All of this makes sense why Lex would be involved in that story and why you'd have Mercy. I agree. On itself, it is weird to have Mercy in a Titans, but when you factor in Superboy, but like, Lex has got to pop up too, right? Like, that would be weird to just have him off screen the whole season.
It would be. So I don't know.
Are they? I wonder if the same rule applies to that show also, which is just, if the DC Universe can't have that character, then what is the point of the DC Universe app? That was the thing that drove me nuts about Titans. Initially was how they kept mentioning Batman and Wonder Woman, and they eventually did finally show a version of Batman, but it was like, what the hell's the point of this? Like, it is your self-controlled show or network. If you can't use those characters, who the hell can?
Exactly. I know, it's frustrating. So it's really dumb.
It's that I can't think of anything dumber. Literally, you control 100% of the process. If you can't use those characters, then what's the point?
Right.
I hope Lex does show up, because if it's the same, if they are beholden to the same rule that Supergirl is, it's just, that's so stupid.
All right, and in other DC news, Drew Van Acker, best known for his work on Pretty Little Liars, has been cast in the role of Aqualad for Titans. So, I gotta tell you, I'm happy to see these casting for Titans, because they were running silent there for a little while, and it's good to know that, you know, the show's continuing on because of all the controversy we've had lately.
Yeah, I agree. I'm very excited that we're going to get an Aqualad. My only concern with season 2 is that it feels confused about what the storyline is going to be. Like, it really is setting up, it seems like it's setting up a big Superboy story, which is cool. I'm totally cool with that. But the Trigon story is not resolved. It's not even close to being resolved.
That is very true, unless they're planning on doing the long haul on that story for some reason.
Which is certainly possible with it, but I still worry that you end up distracting your story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see when it airs.
Yep. All right, and in other DC news, Krypton's Lobo is getting his own spin-off series. I don't really have any comment on that, because I haven't seen him on there yet.
Yeah, I honestly wasn't shocked by that news. The only thing that's surprising is that they've already announced it, and he hasn't even actually debuted yet. But, I mean, I feel like when they announced that Lobo was going to be on that, it felt like they were really pushing for that character to get a huge presence. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, based on how the showrunners for that show were talking about Lobo, they seemed pretty eager to get a show for him.
Yeah. So, and as we saw with Krypton, it'll probably land at the DC Universe app too, so. Alright, and for our last bit of news, Tom King's secret TV project changed his Batman plans. And this is what he has to say. I'm working on a DC movie now, New Gods with Ava DuVernay, and a secret television show that hasn't been announced. And King told this to Entertainment Weekly. So now we know why he's not working on the Batman, regular Batman title now. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I still question if that's the whole story, but yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I'm assuming we'll probably find out about that show at Comic-Con, right?
Yeah, probably.
I would assume.
You would think, anyways.
But that's cool. I'm curious to see. I'm assuming it's going to be a comic book show, but I wonder if it might be one of his Vertigo titles, like the Sheriff of Babylon.
Possibly. You know what I wish it would be? Batman. But I know that's wishful thinking.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of, I mean, Gotham, I think, is about as close as we're going to get to a full Batman show for a while, to be honest with you.
I hope not, but you know how popular a Batman show would be?
I agree. I don't disagree with you, but I'm just saying we live in a world where Supergirl can't use Lex Luthor for more than three episodes.
Yeah, I know. That's because some dumb corporate suit doesn't get
Right,
it.
and so that's why I don't know. I would be, sh I would honestly be shocked if it was a Batman show, like a true Batman show. I would be shocked,
Yeah.
especially with that movie coming out. DC for, slash Warner Brothers, it's probably really Warner Brothers, but collectively between the two, cannot seem to pull their heads out of their butts in terms of it's possible to have more than one version of a character on the screen.
Yep. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
This is Mandy from Caster Quest, and we're inviting you to join us as we explore Patrick Rothfuss's best-selling fantasy series, The Kingkiller Chronicle. You can find Caster Quest at casterquest.com, on SoundCloud, on Apple Podcasts, or at our podcast network at esopodcast.com.
Research and Chandrian, Ambrose Jack is dumb, Malone, Dennis on a date. Master Kilvin, old ass man, a selling lamps to folks in Imre, Will and Sim and Diox, Danchen, Tabalin the Great.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Adventures of the Super Sons number 11. So, in this issue of the Super Sons, looks like we're battling Rex Luthor. But we had the old versions of John and Damian show up. Okay, one thing I thought was weird in this issue, I thought that Kid Lantern wasn't supposed to be able to use his ring except for that one time, but they show him like flying around and stuff in this.
I interpret it as that once the robot version of Jonah Hex tricked him into activating his whatever the mechanism was that caused the emergency activation of his ring, that permanently activated the ring.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that was what was implied.
Okay, but I thought they said something about him not having very much energy or something, or he used it all up or something. So,
maybe he recharged in between episodes? I don't know.
I don't know either. Nevertheless, it was kind of cool seeing him do some stuff.
It was cool. I thought, I mean, honestly, the thing that I was questioning more was the way they sort of hand-waved the adult versions of John and Damian coming back. I thought that was like, it was like, that explanation was so stupid, I would have rather them just not explained it at all.
What I found funny was when John picks up his younger self, and he's like, "This is great, I missed me." Found that freaking hilarious.
I mean, like I said, I was happy that they were back. It was, I mean, given that this was like a huge climactic fight for the run, I mean, it makes sense that they were there, but it was so, it was the explanation, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense, but it was so silly. It was just like, I mean, what? Whatever. It was, yeah, this was a cool issue, in that it felt like things are starting to tie together and wrap up a little bit.
Honestly this comic is, it's gone on for almost 12 issues, but it was really a title that kind of stretched itself out. It should have been shorter.
It was too long, I will say. And I think that's part of the problem, is that the central conflict with this really ought not to have been 12 issues long, and they've had to artificially string it out, which is one of the reasons why I liked this one, because it felt like it was finally wrapping things up.
Yeah. So, which it will next issue.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. The way that the story that they chose to tell is not a 12 issue story. I think you definitely could have done a 12 issue Super Sons miniseries in a way that didn't go about the story like this. I think you could have done like what they sort of did this. They sort of did mini arcs, but they still tried to tie them all together, and it just didn't really work.
No, they should have done just separate arcs, and I think it would have been fine.
I think you could have done just 12 individual stories. I think would have been cool.
That would have been cool. Or even two-parters, even.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, or you could have made even like the last two, the big two-parter to end it would have been fitting. I think because I get what they're the central framing device is effectively this is their summer vacation, but it's in real time for us, it's been a year that this has been going on, and it also feels like they've been out on this adventure for
a year. I know,
like, it does not feel like a summer vacation length adventure that they've been on. So that was a little jarring when he reminded you of that. I was like, oh, that is a lot of stuff to happen in a short amount of time.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman number 72.
Speaking of tying everything in together, holy cow.
I know.
what an issue. In terms of, like, if you were curious about, you know, what King's master plan was throughout this whole run, oh my goodness.
I know. It's like this started way back in his first issue. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could argue maybe it started after the initial Gotham one, that, like, after the Gotham's thing happens, that's where Bane sees his opportunity. Yeah. It's, wow. The way he managed to tie in, I mean, some of it was a little bit of a stretch, sure, but, like, the way he managed to make basically every story along this arc mean something as a part of Bane's plan was incredible.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of, it was cool how they tied it all, he tied it all together. Now, did you get the, because it's never been explained to us yet where Gotham and Gotham Girl got their powers. Do you think that could have came from Bane? Do you think he set them on the path?
The suggestion here seems to be that it might have been Bane.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's the what I got out of that too.
And especially if you go off of how they were trying to, in that miniseries, they were trying to reanimate Gotham. That was definitely Bane, which I found odd that they left that unsaid. I always found that odd. They never explicitly say it's Bane in that, but it was like, but it's Venom. It's clearly Bane. Why wouldn't you say it at some point?
Yeah.
Especially Williamson, who's not, I would say, not a subtle writer.
Which still seems odd to me that he wrote that story, but okay.
He should not have written that story.
One thing I was unclear of is, how did Thomas Wayne factor into this? What does he have against Bruce?
He doesn't want Bruce to be Batman. And I think thus far, what we've seen is all he's going along with Bane's plan because, in theory, if Bane's plan is successful, Bruce no longer is Batman.
Yeah, but I still don't get why.
I feel like we're going to get more of that in the next couple of issues.
I hope so, because they need to explain why better to me.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I think it does need more explanation, but I feel like King deserves the benefit of the doubt in this, because look how well he's laid out this Batman story. Okay. It's very possible that the Thomas Wayne thing never totally makes sense. I will admit that. But I feel like we will get a pretty good explanation for it.
And I'm wondering where Thomas Wayne came from. Did he come from the button event, or I don't
I assume so. I mean, it has to at least been a part of it, because that's, remember, coming out of the button, the big thing that the dad told him was, don't be Batman.
Yeah.
So I assume it is influenced by the button.
All right. Well, I'm excited about more Batman, so.
Yeah, I have to say, if you have only been reading King's Batman run on and off and are interested in a nice summary of his run, honestly, this is a great issue because you can get yourself caught up effectively on all of the major beats of his story. Also, if you're interested in, I mean, he's had other good Bane arcs in this run, but this one, if you love that mastermind Bane, like the original version of Bane that you got in that Nightfall run, this is that Bane.
All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Justice League number 25. All right, here it is. Finally, Cletus, Superman finally got free. And Batman was helping him. So that was really cool to see. I like how they did the, you know, the holding of the lights kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or his, at least he imagined it that way. But I really liked how they ended up working together. And then when Superman finally got free and the World Forger was telling Lois to shoot him down or whatever, fire at him, and she realized it was Clark, how that changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cool.
I agree. I thought this was a great issue. And you could make the argument that, you know, Batman isn't really betraying the team, which I know, I think I mentioned last time.
You did.
But to me, that doesn't ruin this story. To me, what was, for me reading this, it, what was interesting wasn't that the twist, so to speak, that Batman isn't betraying the team, but in like finding out how he is, you know that he's helping the team, but you don't know how. And finding out the how was interesting to me.
Yeah.
So I guess it kind of depends on how you look at it.
The other thing I thought was really cool was the World Forger joining the Justice League. I thought that was a cool twist. I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, I have to admit, that was not something I anticipated either.
And I still find Baby Starro very funny.
Yeah, Jarro, I don't think Jarro...
Or Jarro, I guess that's what his name is.
I mean, it is a Baby Starro, you're not wrong. I don't think Jarro's going to get old anytime soon. Because the one nice thing, I feel like Snyder doesn't overuse him. He pops up just enough to be like, oh yeah, that's right. But he doesn't, like, you know, kill the joke every issue. To me, at least.
I think he even called him Dad or Daddy, something like that. And he's like, don't call me that. I found that freaking hilarious. But, yeah, this story is, it's getting good. I'm excited to see what's going to happen next, because the World Forgers... That sounded like their next step was to find the monitor and the anti-monitor to stop their mother. So, very interesting. And then, of course, we see Lex Luthor is reborn, which wasn't any surprise.
No, I mean, especially given what we... Was it the... I think it was the Year of the Villain special. We saw him being in that, like, container.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... another great issue, and I'm looking forward to the next one of that one, too. All right, let's move on to our next issue, Shazam number 6. I'm really curious what's going to happen with the family dynamic. I was surprised. Were you surprised to learn that Billy's father had been in jail?
No, I almost felt like I knew that he was in jail.
I can't remember. Did they tell us that in the original miniseries?
I don't think so. I don't know how I was not surprised that he was in jail, though.
Okay.
Not like I'm not saying this like I figured out the twist. I'm saying like I felt like I knew that. Like when I read that, I was like, yeah, that's right.
The other thing I really liked about the story was the Black Adam Savannah battle. I thought that was fairly interesting.
It was, but my issue with the with this comic is the one that I've been kind of saying this for this whole run, is that I felt like I didn't get enough of any story that we saw.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot going on.
I still feel like there's too much. Like, and it doesn't feel like we're... The comic felt... Honestly, at the end of this issue, the comic felt more unfocused than it previously had, because Billy and Mary leave...
The Funlands.
Funland, thank you. Funlands. But then that's not resolved. They're, like, starting a new arc instead of resolving that the Funlands arc. And then the two boys that were in the video game world get stopped by the Wizard Shazam and get taken away from there. So then that story, which looked like it would be kind of a fun little adventure, never really gets a conclusion either. And instead they move on to something else. I like all of the threads that they're trying to tell are very interesting to me, but they're all trying to tell them in one 20-page comic.
Yeah, I think ultimately this is going to be better read as a graphic novel.
But, like, I don't think it's going to read well as a 6-issue graphic novel. I think it's something that Johns feels like he's banking heavily that this is going to be a long run. And that is just, unless you're writing Batman, Wonder Woman, or Superman, that's the gamble I don't think as a writer you can take. Especially with Shazam. I'm sorry, but you have to look at DC's history with Shazam. They are not great about keeping that character in print.
That is very true.
And I worry that we're going to end up frustrated at some point because he's setting up all of these things that I know Johns is capable of following through on. I mean, look at the massive lore and story that he managed to build Green Lantern. I know he can do it, but Green Lantern, he also built up slowly. Imagine if he had just thrown all of those new things at you at once. That's a little bit more what this feels like. It feels like he's throwing everything that he wants to tell us at once, and then it's like, and then I will resolve them as I go. Which is, I trust that he will, but I'd rather just be spoon-fed those instead. You know what I mean? I don't need all of it at once.
Yeah, I know what you mean. One other thing I liked about this issue was Black Adam was really being a villain in this. I see what he's wanting to do. He's wanting to control all of magic. Which reminds me of a villain in a book series that's one of my favorites, where the villain in that one, his goal is to control all magic. So I saw ties to that, and I'm like, ooh, that's really interesting. And I'm really interested in seeing more of that play out as the story goes along. We get to the end of the issue, and we see that Mary reveals to the... adoptive parents or their foster parents that she has superpowers and the rest of the kids have them. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamic that's going on from moving forward with that. Are they going to be accepting? Are they not going to be accepting? Or is it going to be we're not going to accept this at first, but then have to accept it in the end?
Probably that one.
You think that one?
I would bet pretty good money it's going to be that one. But again, that's an interesting subplot, but did we need that right now?
No, because there's too much going on.
That's the problem. I was like, that's a cool subplot, but not right now. Not when we still have what's going on with Black Adam and Mr. Mind. What's going on with the kids with Takitani? What's going on with the kids that are with Shazam? What's going on with Billy's dad? Like, all of that in a 20-page comic. Like, at the very least, if you're trying to cram this much in, at least make it a longer comic. I'd almost prefer if they were like those prestige, like, you know, 50-page comics that were coming out bi-monthly.
So, yeah.
This is weird. I like this comic. I know these criticisms are what I'm focusing on. I like the comic. It's too much. It's too much at once.
When don't you have some sort of criticism?
Well, usually when I don't like a comic, to be fair. So I'm trying to clarify that in this case, I know I'm having a lot of criticism with this issue, but I do very much like this title, and I like all of the storylines that it's trying to tell. I don't think it's doing any of them justice at the moment.
Though, I'm still enjoying it quite a bit, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hooked. I really want it. That's the thing. I want to see what happens in all of these arcs. I'm very curious to see what happens.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, The Green Lantern number 8. I got to tell you, I really enjoyed Hal Jordan and Oliver Queen teaming up. But I got to tell you, what the hell is going on in this story?
Oh, what a... I know I say this a lot for this series, but like, this is just the most Grant Morrison comic. It's so... Oh my goodness. He probably was high when he wrote this. I feel like you had to be high to completely understand it to a certain extent.
Good. So I'm not the only one who didn't know what the heck was going on.
I feel like I loosely followed what happened.
Loosely followed what happened too, but I was going like, okay.
I feel like that's sort of the point though. Like, I feel like they're tripping. They are literally tripping as they're resolving this story. So I felt like I was supposed to feel a little disoriented because they're disoriented. They're shooting at the freaking moon while they're high.
I know.
This was nuts. I like, oh my goodness. There are people that love, absolutely love this issue. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is exactly the kind of stuff that they want in a comic. I really liked it myself, but I mean, it's just, I was trippy to say the least.
I enjoyed it too. I had problems following it, but the moments between Hal Jordan and Oliver Queen were fun. So I really enjoyed that. The thing I did not like was Sinestro at the end in his old costume. Come on, can we get his newer costume back, please?
I'm worried that they're going away from it. It almost feels like the DC editorial position is that he's using his old costume again, which...
Why?
It's not a good... I'm sorry. Like, it worked in its time, but we have come up with a better costume. It is I know it's subjective, but to me, it is objectively better. It is an objectively better costume.
I agreed. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Young Justice number 6. So this wrapped up the Jim World storyline.
But, like, not in a totally satisfying way to me. It almost felt like it, like, shrugged, like, oh, yeah, Opal's defeated now. I don't know about you. It didn't feel like there was any lead up to it. It almost felt like they like accidentally beat Opal. Am I crazy? Like when I was reading, it didn't feel like they purposely succeeded. It felt like they sort of like, oh, wait, is that Opal? Oh, yeah, I guess we should fight him. Sure. Oh, look at that. We won. That's cool. We're going to go back to Earth now.
We're not done with Jim World. I can tell you that. From the ending, we're not done with it.
Well, no, clearly, but still, it felt like there was so much exposition in this comic, but it was like to the detriment of the plot. Like they're so busy talking about the plot points that had Bendis simply just, I know we talked about he tried with the first issue to just like jump in straight into the action, but the downside to that is what we've seen with subsequent issues is that they're then left with all of this necessary exposition that they have to go through to set up what was actually going on in the story. And so most of this issue is them talking at each other like, oh, this happened to me, and then this happened to me, and this is my origin, and this is my origin. Oh, and there's Opal. Ah, I guess we should fight him now.
Yeah, because they beat him in like 4 pages.
But it didn't feel like they even intentionally found him. I could be misremembering this part of the story, but it felt like they almost accidentally found him. And we're like, oh, hey, is that Opal? I guess we should fight him.
Yeah, because his castle like became a... His castle was like the dude or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really weird.
It was not, this is not what I wanted out of the climactic issue for this first arc. It just sort of felt like I guess we won.
Well, they're like all standing around talking when he shows up.
But that's my point. That was what this issue was. It was a lot of standing around talking at each other, and it was the climactic issue. That all of this dialogue should have been issue 1 dialogue, and instead it was issue 6.
Yeah, And we finally found out the explanation about Superboy. Apparently that wasn't his wife and daughter.
That felt like a cop out to me. I'm not gonna lie. That felt like I wasn't a fan. Tell that story. Like, why not? Why, like, if you want to do the, oh, look, he's got a wife and a kid, just tell that freaking story. Do this cop out.
I would have found that more interesting, actually, especially if his daughter is, was that a son? I can't remember if that was a son or a daughter.
I think it was a son. Pretty sure it was a boy.
So, that would have been more interesting to me if he would have brought back his wife and son.
Well, of course it would have been more interesting. It would have actually had any sort of narrative consequence. That was sort of my big problem with it, is that ultimately it just meant nothing. Like, that status quo meant effectively nothing. That's probably the last we will ever see of those two characters.
You're probably right.
And so ultimately, what did it do? It was basically a shot for shock value. Like, OMG, Superboy has a wife and kid. Oh, no, actually he doesn't. And then that's it. Like, that's just the last you ever see of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is disappointing. Well, I guess we're going to be getting a new story arc coming up soon. I don't think we're going to be revisiting Jim World for a little bit. I think they're going to move on to something else, and that might actually help the story along. I don't know.
I think it will. I actually, despite my criticisms of this issue, I actually think that there's a good chance that the following arc will be better because they can finally stop standing around talking at each other and just be the Young Justice team.
Yeah.
I think finally after this issue, we finally got the last of the explanations out of the way, and we can finally just roll with what we've got.
Yeah. Because it'd be nice to get... They don't have a headquarters or anything right now, so it'll be nice to establish that and move on. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk Swamp Thing.
Hey, this is Mike. A few months back, I was given the assignment of creating a new promo for the Earth Station 1 podcast. I figured I had a ton of time, but I kind of got distracted. Go figure. And we realized we had somehow missed our deadline. So here I am late at night trying to figure out something creative to get you to listen to our show. I guess I could just use my announcer voice. Listen to the Earth Station 1 podcast. For almost 9 years, we've been bringing your inner geek out to play. We're a founding member of the ESO Network, and you can find us up on most media players like iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. I think that might work.
And we're back. Let's talk Swamp Thing, Season 1, Episode 3, He Speaks. And joining us tonight, we have a special guest, Angela Pritchett. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Glad to be here.
We're excited to have you on here, especially since you told me you were on Swamp Thing.
I was. I worked on one of the episodes. When I worked on it, they told me it was episode 3, but then I watched episode 3, and I'm like, this doesn't seem like it's anywhere near the scenes I worked on. So I'm guessing they show up in the next, like, 2 or 3 episodes.
So when I was watching this, I was looking, I was checking all the background scenes to see if I could find you.
Yeah, no, I watched it earlier today because I was at Origins Game Fair this weekend. And so I watched it earlier today and I was just sitting there going, this is not moving as fast to get to the scenes I was in. So I was like, what? Did they change it around because of the cutting the episode short or something? So
we were very bummed to hear that season 2 got canceled. I was curious if you, any of your connections with the show, if you heard anything of why they might have canceled it.
So I've heard different things. One was the state of North Carolina had a budget issue, which has been totally debunked. It's not true. Swamp Thing actually got a lot of money out of the state of North Carolina. The pilot was actually considered a separate production from the first season, so they got separate funding for each one. And then I've heard a couple of different things because there hasn't been a real actual thing said as to why this show was canceled. But my guess is because, like, when they cut the season down from 13 episodes to 10 episodes, they said it was for creative differences. So my guess is the show got canceled because of creative differences, because they wanted, one group wanted, like James wanted them, wanted a horror series, whereas I think WB and all of them wanted a crime procedural. And they just weren't meeting in the middle. Whereas, yeah, and that's my biggest thought on why it was canceled, because, like, the outcry since the first episode and since them saying that they've canceled it has been, like, crazy. You go on the Instagram for DC Universe, and every post since the first Swamp Thing post is, like, people hashtagging Save Swamp Thing and complaining that Swamp Thing has been canceled. I know people that purchase DC Universe just to watch Swamp Thing.
Wow. Yeah, wow. So, yeah, that's interesting to find out, creative differences.
That's really interesting, too, because I have definitely not gotten police procedural vibes out of Swamp Thing so far. And I can't complain. Like, I love the horror vibes. You don't get that with a lot. That's one of the genres that superhero comics adaptations haven't gotten into a lot. And so I thought that's what makes this show interesting. They're doing something that a lot of other comic book shows aren't doing right now.
I completely agree. Like, the fact that, one, James Wan was working on it, so I was like, oh, this is going to be amazing. And just the fact that it was Swamp Thing, so I was like, okay, what are they going to do with this? Because it is such a crazy character for them to kind of bring into the DC universe of TV shows. And also, are they going to take it in a Vertigo approach, or are they going to take it in a classic DC approach? So it was one of those things that there were just so many questions on what they could do with this show. And the fact that they took it in a more horror way had me super pumped, because I love horror.
I mean, Swamp Thing is a horror comic at its roots, so I don't know. I'd be curious to talk to the people that think that it should be a crime procedural, because that's what Swamp Thing run is that?
It's probably the same people that thought Lucifer would be a great crime procedural instead of the actual show, the actual comic.
To be fair, I have to say, I actually like the Lucifer TV show. That
I do
actually
too.
Worked.
But the fact that I look at the Lucifer comic and then I look at that TV show and I'm just kind of like, wait a minute.
Yeah, they are not the same thing by any means.
I haven't read a lot of Swamp Thing comics. Most of the Swamp Thing stuff I've read have been in crossovers into other titles, but I was really enjoying the show, even just after a few episodes. It was different from what we've seen before, which is what I like.
I have to say, honestly, my biggest problems with the show so far have been that I'm already frustrated that there are storylines that are getting set up that I know aren't going to get resolved. Nothing to do, the quality of the episodes themselves has been great, but I'm like the character they've introduced, the guy that's going to eventually be Blue Devil, there is no way that that's going to get fully resolved satisfactorily in one season, you know what I mean? And so when his character has popped up these last two episodes, I just get mad. Not because I dislike what they're doing with that character at the moment, but because I'm like, well, but we're not going to get, it's like they're teasing us with it. We're not going to get it.
Yeah, that is disappointing. So what is your overall feeling on the episodes you've seen so far, Angela?
I love it. It's just, it has a very darker tone than a lot of the DC shows we've seen. I mean, Arrow had a very dark tone, but it was a very edgy dark tone, whereas Swamp Thing to me has that more horror feel, and it's the dark, ominous, what's going to happen here. And they have left a ton of questions open in the first three episodes. After watching the third episode, I'm like, holy crap, how are they going to finish all these in the next seven episodes?
I know.
So I really hope we do have some finish, since they aren't giving us a second season, at least that we know of. Maybe the people at DC will see the light, but
yeah.
I'm not too hopeful with how awful their DC Universe advertising campaign has been to actually get this network out. So, for the first part of them advertising Teen Titans, I didn't realize it was a TV series. I thought it was a movie.
Oh, really?
Their whole advertising campaign seemed more like it was for a movie than a TV series. So it's just been a horrible, horrible advertising campaign for the whole network. So I'm just kind of like, why are you shooting yourselves in the foot, DC? You have, as of right now, I've only seen two of the three shows that were made for DC. I haven't seen Teen Titans yet. I've only seen Doom Patrol and now Swamp Thing. So I'm just kind of like, you have these two amazing shows. You should be like pimping the crap out of this because they are really good.
That's an interesting point that you raise. Actually, I have to agree with that. I don't think I don't remember very many Titans promos. I did see a decent number of Doom Patrol promos once the show got started rolling. I think once they realized what they had, they started putting more stuff out, but I don't remember ever really getting that with Titans.
So Titans at New York Comic Con, they had posters of each character just plastered all over the place, like you would, like for some of the Marvel movies had each character poster, or for like the Justice League, they had each character poster. They had posters like that plastered everywhere. And for me, that doesn't scream television show. That screams movie. So that's why I was just kind of like, oh, I guess it's a movie for the network, not a television show. So I was just kind of like, okay, cool. But it was just really, really weird marketing on their part, because they were really, really strong at conventions, because one of my side jobs is I work at conventions. And so, like, they've had really strong DC Universe marketing at conventions, but that's really it. And a lot of their, like, main people that would subscribe to this don't go to San Diego Comic-Con. They don't necessarily go to New York Comic-Con. So it's like you have to get this out there elsewhere, too.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think they've done much advertising for it during this, even the CW shows, which you would think would pick up a lot of people who might want to watch these shows.
I mean, yeah. I guess they've had some advertising in the comics, but that's really it as well. So I'm just like, you know, putting the advertisements for them with Arrow, with The Flash, with Supergirl, with, you know, Legends of Tomorrow, that would be where their market is, and they haven't really been doing that. Or even on Adult Swim or something. I mean, like, they can buy the ad space because they're not going to put it during any of the DC shows that show during the day, because, like, while DC Universe has all the cartoon stuff, they're not going to advertise Swamp Thing and Doom Patrol and stuff like that to kids.
Right.
So no Doom Patrol commercials between Teen Titans Go.
It's nice to get these mature shows that are different from the CW shows, I think. I've been really enjoying them.
Yeah, I mean, they're less beholden to the traditional, like, TV show model. You know what I mean? They don't have to have that mid-season sweeps arc. They're, I think, less beholden to maintain, like, to the audience, so to speak, because they're filming it all at once. Yeah, you're getting definitely a little bit more sophisticated storytelling with all three of the original shows that they've made so far, but in particular, Doom Patrol and Swamp Thing.
Yeah, Doom Patrol was great.
Oh, it was fantastic. They just went all out and all weird for that. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, it was.
It makes me happy to know that a pug saved the world, because I own two pugs. Like, the second that episode, I'm just, like, laughing nonstop till I'm crying at the TV from that episode.
It's great that we that DC has a platform for those type of shows.
No, I agree, because we don't really, like, it used to be those type of shows went to sci-fi. They went to Universal, because the original Swamp Thing was on Universal, I believe, like, a million years ago. So it's one of those things where we don't have the way network cable isn't as big as it used to be, so streaming networks are where it's at. But I just kind of wish that every company went and tried to make their own, and they would just stick with Hulu and Netflix.
Yeah, that would
be
nice.
We might actually have more longevity for some of these shows.
Doom Patrol would be a massive hit if it had shown on either Hulu or Netflix.
Oh, yeah. It would have been great. No doubt. Even if it was on something like HBO or whatever, it would have been fantastic.
If it was on HBO, it would have won awards. I mean, just to be honest. You know what I mean?
I think, isn't HBO getting The Watchmen?
Yes. It is, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, and DC Universe's social media have actually been advertising The Watchmen show that's going to be on HBO, because they posted about it and everything was complaints about Swamp Thing being canceled under it. No one even, like, no one even talked about The Watchmen show. They just complained about Swamp Thing.
That's funny.
That is funny.
So maybe HBO will see and pick Swamp Thing up.
That would be nice. I'd be surprised, but that would be really nice.
That would be nice. I have a feeling that's not going to happen either.
I know. It's wishful thinking.
So one thing I want to get your guys' opinions on, do you think DC Universe is gonna remain its own thing, or do you think it's going to end up getting folded into a larger Time Warner streaming service?
I think it's going to get folded into a Time Warner, and I don't want it to be. I like it like it is now, its own separate thing, but my fear is if it is wrapped up into Time Warner, it's going to lose some of its uniqueness.
No, I totally agree. I feel like it's going to get stuck in Time Warner's streaming service that they're going to eventually bring out because the mouse scared them, and now they're scrambling to try and be better. But I also feel like it might lose some of what's making it so awesome. But I can also be wishful and hope that the producers, like James Wan and the other people working on it, will kind of stick to their guns. But if there are creative differences, then that means multiple producers are fighting about what they want it to be, too. Mm.
To play devil's advocate with you guys, because I agree with you. I like it on its own as well. One positive thing I could see happening, though, is if it does get rolled in, is that it does, then these shows reach a wider audience than they otherwise would. And maybe that helps them keep, like, I feel like maybe that helps a show like Swamp Thing survive longer. I don't know. I also wonder how they're going to do it, because the idea is to include, like, something like HBO into that as well. And, like, how do you mix? So I almost wonder if they do, like, a, like, do you have, like, the Time Warner thing, and then you go into separate channels from that, and in which case DC Universe could still kind of work because it's sort of like its own little world within the multiverse of Time Warner? I wonder how they would approach it.
The streaming service has little different channels.
Yeah. That would be kind of cool. Actually, all I'm saying, I could do something like that.
Do you think that they will lose the comics part of it if they do that?
That would be a huge mistake. That's what this was initially supposed to be, in a lot of ways, was their answer to Marvel Unlimited. And it now that they have finally added, or are in the midst of adding, the full DC digital collection, it's a better version. Originally it wasn't, because the comic selection was limited, but now it's everything Marvel Unlimited is, but better, because you're also getting all of the other content that DC produces with TV shows, movies, and things like that. Like, you have both the entire comics library and the entertainment library at your hands. So it would be, in my opinion, as a comic fan, that's part of the reason I got DC Universe, was for the comics library. So to get rid of that half is a mistake.
Have you actually been reading their comics library?
I do. I do actually use it occasionally. Especially, the thing I really like that they do is that you can link from episode, like an episode of Swamp Thing, you can then link to, like, the first Swamp Thing comic, or you can jump to Alan Moore's first Swamp Thing run.
I have to admit, I haven't really read any of the comics on there. Of course, my time has been very limited, so barely getting the comics that we need to read for the show has been hard for me. Have you been reading any of the comics on the DC app, Angela?
I have not. I have strictly just been watching the animated movies that they put up there, and then the TV shows. So I haven't read any of the comics yet, but, like, I'm very much, I love having the paper comics and the trade paperbacks in my hand. My first job was at a comic shop when I was 12, so, like, I grew up just every Wednesday reading everything that came in before I had to do subscription pulls. So it's one of those things where I just like to have it in my hand, not necessarily sit at my computer screen and read it, because I work on my computer so much as is.
My reading
is my getaway.
I'm totally opposite. I love reading my comics on my Kindle. I like having my whole comics library in my hand and going through it panel by panel.
Yeah, Angela, I'm more in line with you. I prefer things physical, but I do like the nice thing with the digital library, like what DC has or what Marvel Unlimited has, is when you want to oh, what was that comic? You can go back and you can find, you can jump back to that and find those. It's incredibly useful for that, like, quick access to some important, like, you're reading a summary and it references some issue and you go find it that way. I love it for that. When I was writing some of my papers, it was incredibly helpful because I would be writing something and then I would realize I needed to reference some older issue and I could jump back quickly. It's not the same experience, and I totally agree, as holding it in your hands, but there is something nice about that, like having access to that large of a library.
And don't get me wrong, I still download like my Sandman comics and stuff on my Kindle app when I get on a plane because it's a lot easier to not have to pack them. But I very, very much still love my paper books.
So I guess I'm the weirdo there.
Yeah, you are. Oh, I mean, yeah, we already knew that.
Tell us some of your experiences when you were on Swamp Thing, Angela.
Okay, well, I don't want to spoil too much of what I did, but I worked because it's supposed to be set in the summer. It was filmed in January in North Carolina, which the 13 hours I was on set, it was about 30 degrees the entire time.
Oh, wow.
And it was a summer scene. I had the hindsight because we had to also bring our own wardrobe, and then like wardrobe would give us stuff to wear, or if we had stuff they liked, we would wear that. I had the hindsight to show up in jeans because I was like, it's going to be all night and I'm going to freeze. So I showed up in jeans instead of shorts because there were people there wearing shorts. And I was just like, you guys are crazy. It is so cold because it's North Carolina and it's Wilmington. So it's the coast, but it's still freezing cold. Like, we filmed from, I think, 5 o'clock in the afternoon until 6 a.m. So it was an all-night shoot. And, like, they had a couple heaters outside, but none. And I did extra work for it since my job is acting. But normally I don't do extra work. But the second that I found out a DC show was filming in the city I lived in, and there was no way I was going to be able to get a day player role in it, I signed up to be an extra right away because it was a DC show. And I love DC shows. They had no heaters and extras handling. So every time we walked outside, we were like crouching around the heaters and then coming in and putting our jackets on. But yeah, it was just really cool. It's multi-cameras, which is fantastic. We filmed a giant town scene. So Abby was there. Matt was there. Matt's mom, the police chief. The guy that plays Blue Devil was there. He wasn't in the scene, but he was still there. And then Liz was there. So it's a full scene with all of them except for the actor who played Blue Devil. He was just there to be there. And so it's this whole scene of, and I don't, like I said, I'm not going to spoil anything about it because, one, for all I know, because of the cut down from 13 to 10 episodes, they may have cut the scene for all I know.
That would be a bummer.
That would be super sad. And they paid there were like about 100 of us there that night. So it would have been a huge chunk of their budget. So I don't think it did. I think it's actually probably going to pop up around episode 5 or 6 with the way that the season seems to be going pace-wise is kind of what I'm guessing now. When we did it, the director told us it was episode 3. But my guess is because after watching up to episode 3, I'm guessing it's probably going to be like episode 5 or 6. But just kind of trying to figure out the way the pacing is going. For all I know, it could be episode 4. But I'm still not sure just because I don't know exactly. But the scene was actually, it was really, really cool just to see the process of it too, because they had the special effects makeup person in there and a lot of their effects makeup is practical. It wasn't all computer generated. So like they legit were pulling out the blood and the sponges and everything. It has to do with one of the main characters possibly having the sickness. So it's going to be super interesting. I'm trying not to spoil any of it.
Well, in this in episode 3 here, we saw one of the main characters get the sickness.
Yeah, one of the CDC person.
You're right. So you're saying that we might have another character that's more prominent get the sickness?
Yes. So the one I'm talking about is one of the main like Louisiana town people characters.
Interesting. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, no, it's, I'm super excited to see how it all plays out, because getting to see it in the background and see how they were filming it, and then like when we were acting on camera, I want to see how it actually like translates into what they did.
I have to say, I like when you mentioned that they do the way they do the effects. That's one thing I've really liked with Swamp Thing, is that because they're doing practical effects, it's not this obvious CGI character standing in the middle of a scene. You know what I mean? Like, I like having that person's actually physically present in the scene.
Yeah, no, it's this, the practical effects were really, really great. And as someone who like has done practical effects in film, it was just really, really great to see, because they weren't just like, okay, let's put some green stuff on this so we can green screen this or green it later and, you know, do computer effects. So I was really excited when I saw them pulling out and like actually for the one scene, the character that they were doing some like kind of gore effects with. It was really cool. And then they have another scene that's going to be coming out that they were talking about, where it's actually someone who's puts their hand into something that gets grinded up and stuff, and it's all practical. So I was like, oh my gosh.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
That'd be great.
Well, we've already seen somebody ripped apart.
Yeah.
So they're not holding back.
Yeah, no, it's super awesome, just like the amount, like the how far they went for the effects and everything for this show. And that's one of the things that makes it so unique for some of the DC shows, because we normally don't get that level of like gore and like creepiness and stuff.
Yeah.
I think they've also done a good job of picking out their actors and actresses, because I think they're doing a great job of portraying their characters. I'm liking Abby a lot. I'm liking the villain. I can't remember his name. And also his wife. I think she's been doing a good job too in her portrayal.
I was super excited when they announced her, because I love the Dune movies. So I was super excited when they announced her.
So I think she's been doing a great job of portraying her character and her character's, how she feels the loss of her daughter and how it's affecting her. I mean, in this episode, in episode 3 here, we saw her seeing her daughter in like the mirrors and stuff. And I'm wondering, I was wondering when I was watching this episode, how much is that in her head, or is she actually really seeing her? You know, because the thing about Swamp Thing is you have the mystical side of it too, which I'm finding really interesting, especially if that's not in her head.
I kind of feel like it's not in her head, you know?
Yeah, like, no, because we don't necessarily know what's going on in the swamp. We know we have Swamp Thing. We had a bunch of bugs in this dude. We don't know what caused that necessarily. So, and then we have the one voodoo lady who's doing the tarot card readings.
One thing I found interesting in the summary for this episode, they refer to the rot specifically, but the show itself has never addressed those major, like the green, the red, and the rot. They've never actually referenced those in any way. So I was surprised when the summary mentioned it, because I almost wondered if maybe at one point, one version of the episode, somebody has said something about that and then they took it out.
Well, they did call the disease like the green disease. They have referenced that a couple times in the first 3 episodes. Other than that, they have called it like the green disease or the green plague or something like that. They were calling it the green something. But other than that, they haven't really mentioned anything else.
Maybe that's something they'll explain in a future episode also.
Yeah,
they got a lot of explaining to do in the next 7 episodes.
I'm really enjoying this series so far, and I'm sad that the sad thing about it is when I'm watching it is knowing that we're not going to get any more.
Yeah, I agree. That's been by far the most frustrating thing for me about the first 3 episodes, has been like, oh, this is really good. Why is this ending?
Yeah, no, I think that's everyone's response to it. Like, I watched that pilot and I was like, why would you cancel this after just showing this? Like, seriously, someone at WB must really hate Swamp Thing.
that was like, my thoughts.
Do you have a beef against Alan Moore or something? Come on now.
I have to imagine that this decision is being made by people that have not even actually seen the show.
I feel exactly that way. Sadly, in Hollywood, those are generally the people that get to make the decisions. So.
Yep.
Yeah. Unfortunately. So I'm curious. What other DC shows do you normally watch?
Oh goodness, I was an avid Arrow fan. The Flash, Supergirl, anything that was on the WB that was DC, I was watching. I'm sorry, do what?
Oh, I was going to say, so basically everything we talk about every week.
Yeah. So that I have been watching, I just finished episode 13 of Doom Patrol. I was a little behind because of some conventions that I was a guest at the last few weeks. So I just caught up on episode 13 today after I watched episode 3 of Swamp Thing. And so I've got to catch up on the last two episodes of Doom Patrol, which, again, I'm just like, where is this going? Because that whole show, too, has just been like a cluster mess of, like, how are they going to finish this off?
All I can say is it's really good.
Yeah.
I'm super pumped for it. Like, I have just adored that show since it started.
They stick the landing, in my opinion. The end of the season sticks the landing for me.
Good. I'm super excited to watch them. And then the only one I really haven't watched has been Titans yet. I loved the Hellblazer Constantine series that was on that got cut after one season. I was super sad about that. Like, all these great shows are filming in the Southeast and they keep getting canceled, and it makes me so sad because the Constantine show filmed in Atlanta, which is where Doom Patrol is filming at. So I'm just kind of like, all these amazing shows are filming near me and then they keep getting canceled, except for Doom Patrol. I'm happy that they haven't canceled that one yet.
But they haven't announced that it's renewed yet either, which is making Drew and I both very nervous.
I have to tell you, Cletus, I saw an article from not a source I trust that Doom Patrol may be canceled also. So I've been crossing my fingers hoping it's not true. But I do have to say I did see an article today.
Like, in a horrible, horrible world, they're going to give Titans another season and then cancel Doom Patrol and Swamp Thing. That's like... And I say that as someone who hasn't watched Titans yet, but has also heard that it is the least superior of the three shows.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's easily the weakest of the three shows.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I need to watch it. But Doom Patrol, like, I kept seeing some pictures from it, and I'm like, I need to watch this. This sounds like, after I saw the cast list, I was like, I need to watch this show. And then Swamp Thing, I've been avidly waiting for since, like, day one that they started filming it last year. So... And was also incredibly sad the second they said they were cutting it, because my original goal was, once I got back from Los Angeles, back to North Carolina, was to apply to work on it some more, and then they canceled it before I got back. So, that's very sad.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
So, because it was a really fun experience, other than the fact that it was freezing cold, but it was January in North Carolina.
All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Did you have any shout-outs, Angela?
Well, if you guys want to find me online, you can listen to me every week on Earth Station 1's A Geek Girl's Take, where I do a small three-minute segment on something geeky every week. You can find me on Instagram and Twitch and all those places at Angelise or under Angela Plays Ukulele.
So, and I do listen to you every week on Earth Station 1, so...
Yay!
Because I listen to their show every week. Usually. Now, I haven't listened to the Elton John episode yet because I haven't seen the movie yet, so.
Yeah, I'm always worried about when I do my show if I'm going to spoil something for someone, because I generally do it on new movies and stuff.
Right. Normally, though, I've already either watched or whatever, or I listen because I'm not planning on watching it, so. And, of course, I'm also see you on your YouTube channel, too, when you post stuff there.
Yeah, I do geeky ukulele covers on my YouTube channel. I'm taking a little bit of a break because I've had bronchitis for, like, most of this year, which sucks. But I will be back soon with that. There are big plans for it.
Awesome. All right, Cletus, what's your shout-out for this week?
Yeah, so my Read More Comics recommendation this week on the DC Universe app. has the Blue Devil series. I know he doesn't, like, we get the character in that. Maybe we'll get him as Blue Devil. I have no idea for this season. But if you're interested in checking out that character, I know we had somebody list him as one of their favorite characters, and I will admit some ignorance on this, so I actually checked out a couple of these issues. Anyway, Blue Devil number one, it's through, was it 31? Right there on the DC Universe app. Check some of them out.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about... All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out against Rob Liefeld once again this week, giving him the double middle finger. Because we, you know how he said that DC was going to fall off the cliff or whatever he said? We had 11 items of DC news come out this week. 11 items. I was looking at it and going, man, we're going to spend half the episode just talking about DC news.
I mean, 9 of those items are probably people complaining about Swamp Thing being canceled, but you know.
That's a fair point. I kid.
I'm happy that DC had a lot of news coming out this week. We have lots of comics news coming out this week. We had Titans, which I was happy to see, because we were getting a little worried about not getting in news about the DC Universe app. So I was happy to see we got two new castings for Titans, and that, you know, DC's doing okay. They might be making some changes and going away from their plan from Doomsday Clock. It's still good to see they're going forward with their Leviathan event and what's their other big event? The Justice League event that they're doing too. So happy about that. All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we're going to be talking Catwoman, Detective Comics, Justice League Odyssey, Superman, Wonder Twins, Wonder Woman, Event Leviathan number 1, and we'll be talking Krypton season 1. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.